Chapter 16. The Welcoming of Heroes. The Praetorian Way resounded to cheers as the Space Marines marched from the East Gate Landing Hall towards the centre of the Imperial Palace. Over 3,000 of them, more than had been on Terra at one time for hundreds of years. Millions of citizens lined the route, waving flags bearing the badges of the chapters. They roared and screamed their approbation, ecstatic at the sight of so many of the angels of death. The attack moon lowered at them, its porcine face expressing a fury it was impotent to act upon. Aircraft shrieked overhead, pumping coloured smoke into the hazy atmosphere. Lord hailers sang out hymnals and prayers, and servo skulls bearing vox projectors roared out the names of the most distinguished battle brothers, while others recited the chapter histories of the Space Marines. Giant screens along the route showed pics of dead orcs and burning ships, intercut with the faces of Courland and his fellow lords, their names and honours written in bold text beneath their images. Music blasted from 100 places until the words and melodies were unrecognisable as coherent sounds. They were sonic fragments, an overwhelming cacophony that outsang the loudest battle. Never had Courland heard a million voices scream as one, either in adulation or in pain. He went bareheaded at the High Lord's request, crowned with a laurel wreath. Let the people see their saviour, they said. He envied the 20 sham imperial fists marching behind him, their helms locked in place, their audio dampers working at maximum capacity. Courland kept his face forward. So many people, so many faces, all of them calling his name. Scented flakes of paper rained down on them from every side. It was intoxicating, and it should not be so. He had performed his duty, that was all. He would not allow himself to indulge his emotions. He would not allow himself the folly of pride. They passed from tightly clustered buildings and into the killing field before the palace walls. 4 kilometres of bare rock, open to the sky. Daylight wall dominated it, tinted a delicate rose by the rising sun. The Praetorian Way meekly burrowed its way through the east gate, little more than a wormhole in the fabric of the wall in comparison to the defence's massive size. The wall was stupefyingly tall. Here, Corrin's gene-seed ancestors had fought and died, protecting the Emperor from the gravest enemy of all. What he and his fellow chapter masters had accomplished was nothing by comparison. He reminded himself repeatedly of his own insignificance as they approached the soaring buttresses, towers, gun emplacements, and gigantic statuary. The crowds in the killing field were no less vocal, but free of the resonating Plazcrete canyons of the outer district, the noise was bearable. Daylight wall, in many senses, his wall. Courland had not seen it for so long. The east gate reared up, mighty now he was before it, its revealed scale making the wall all the more titanic. The reflected heat of the early sun bounced from it, glinting from the polished armour of the Space Marine column. Corlin's war gear gleamed newly. Not even his intention to keep his battle damage on show until his brothers were avenged had survived Udo's blunt realpolitik. Issachar's chapter were the battered exception, their creed demanding they mark their wounds well. Courland marched towards the gate, where the multi-lane Praetorian Way became a straight tunnel through the wall. To be coming home like this, alone, the bearer of half-truths and propagandic distortions, blunted the glory of their triumph over the orcs. The moon was still in the sky. The wall stood strong in the face of its aggression, but scarring from its attacks opened up gaps all over the palace's skylines. Despite these reminders of vulnerability around them, the Senatorum Imperialis would doubtless go back to its infighting. The blackness of the gate tunnel swallowed him, and the crowd's jubilation was silenced. Shame dogged his footsteps, and determination drove him on. This state of affairs could not be allowed to persist. It was a thought that would not be quieted all the way through the giving of honours and renewal of fealty that took place in the Senatorium Imperialis at the end of their march. After the ceremony was over, the highest of the high were ushered into a giant hall clad in ornately carved tiles of malachite and onyx. There, an interminable feast began, bookended by pompous speeches. The food was quite exquisite, but Courland was so invested in his problems he found himself insensible to the flavour. He filled himself, as he had been trained to long ago, shoveling delicacies into his mouth to fuel his transhuman metabolism, as if they were the lowest gruel. There were so many ingredients in each dish that a confusing amount of information flooded his brain via his neuroglottis, further darkening his mood. After the feast came the reception, a grand and tedious party where Courland was besieged by a stream of dignitaries that would not stop flowing. Their mouths dripped honeyed comments, a request or criticism behind every one. Courland politely listened to his interlocutors, insisting he had no say in the policies of the Senatorum Imperialis, and that he had no intention of parlaying the assembled chapter's might into political influence. "I am a servant of the Emperor," and its variations became a phrase repeated as often as a battle catechism. The High Twelve and many of the greatest of the lesser lords kept themselves distant from him. Those that attempted an approach shied away under Udo's glowering. When Vangerich appeared at his side, it was so unexpected that Courland did not at first recognize him.
"Good evening, Chapter Master," said a wiry man.
He surveyed the room, not lifting his face to look at the imperial fist. Courland prepared himself for the usual back and forth of insincere small talk and relentless probing, but something made him hesitate in returning the man's greeting. He was armed only with a goblet of wine and a sardonic manner, but there was something about him, a mixture of poise, alertness and confidence that the others lacked and that signalled he was the most dangerous man in the room. Then he looked up, held out a hand, and Courland knew him.
"Drakan Vangerich," said Courland.
Courland's giant fist engulfed Vangerich's hand, and they shook in the civilian manner, palm to palm.
"I recognize you from our discussion. Thank you for your recent good wishes."
"I am only happy they were well received," said Vangerich.
"How could I not heed you? You are dangerous," said Courland.
"My, you are blunt. You don't think these other fine ladies and gentlemen are?" said Vangerich.
"Not in the same way as you," said Courland. "Not immediately. None of them would stand a chance against me in combat, but I suspect you might. And you also possess their political power. There are several of the greatest lords of the Space Marines in this chamber, but I think you are the most dangerous of us all."
Vangerich shrugged slightly. He was small by unaltered human standards and minute by those of the transhumans.
"Correct again, Chapter Master. I suppose I am exceptionally dangerous. Shall I tell you another difference between myself and my fellow High Lords? You and I, Courland, are on the same side."
"We are all on the same side," said Courland. "The Orcs are on the other."
"Oh, Chapter Master, please," Vangerich tutted.
Courland noticed that when the assassin spoke, he hid his lips from prying eyes behind his goblet.
"Don't play the naïf with me. I'm a remarkably good judge of a man's mood, no matter their type, a necessary skill in my role. It is plain that you are not pleased, nor are you satisfied by what you see here on Terra."
"I am not," admitted Courland. "My brothers are all dead. I hold the men and women in this hall responsible."
"You are not alone in doing so. There are others of us who are frustrated by the failure of the Senatorum to contain the Orcs. Now that, Chapter Master, is why we are on the same side. I am sorry, by the way, about your brothers. There was one, Daylight, who was a passing acquaintance of mine."
Courland looked down at Vangerich hard. Daylight had been his company representative on Terra.
"I have had enough of barbed words hidden in flattery. If you seek to goad me, I advise you to seek your sport elsewhere."
"I mean nothing ill by it," said Vangerich. "I will not say Daylight was my friend, but I spoke with him every day, and I always regarded him well. He was an honourable man. It is a shame he realised his dream of going to war. It proved his end."
"War is our purpose. To die in battle is an honour."
As Corin said the words, he doubted them. He remembered the devastation on Adamantua. There had been little honour won there.
"How refreshing," said Vangerich. "These others here, some few of them might hold such noble sentiments. Justina Tull," he pointed out a tall woman in a complicated dress. She held herself aloof, and her face was blank of emotion. She, for example, for all her delusions in initiating the proletarian crusade, her motives were at least pure, in part. Many of the rest of them cannot even claim that. They do not see beyond their own concerns, or they actively promote their own interests. Naturally, they all invoke the Emperor and the good of the Imperium, but frankly it never ceases to amaze me how convenient it is that the will of the Emperor coincides with the aims of every High Lord, no matter how contradictory their statements appear when set one against another. See, said Vangerich, pointing, the Provost, Zek. He is perhaps a little overly concerned with his office. He is very good at his job, but too good to be effective on the council. Lord Commander Militant Veriolt is at odds with Lord High Admiral Lansung and is in Udo's pocket. The telepaths Anwar and Sark are occupied so much with their own vital efforts to keep the Imperium together that they are too easily swayed by quick solutions, whereas the Paternoval envoy Gibran cannot be swayed at all. As he spoke, he indicated the High Lords one at a time. Lansung is a brilliant military commander, but of all of them he is the most responsible for this sorry mess.
His ship stood back while we attacked, said Corland.
As it did when Tull's crusade went forward. I cannot think why. He has perhaps lost his self-belief. I'm sure his own follies were driven by the idea that he was the best man for the job. That only he knows the way to extend the Imperium's reach. That his manoeuvring was nearly the end of us. They all think that they alone know the answer. Confidence and zealotry. A terrible mix. He hoarded his fleet when he should have attacked, all for the chance at an office he will now never hold. The Inquisition seeks to repair the machineries of government, but cannot agree with itself, and falls to infighting. The fat man there in three countesses' worth of jewellery is Mesring, the ecclesiarch. A less holy man I have rarely met. And let us not forget Kubik, of course, hiding away on Mars, up to no good. He's turning into something of a threat to the Imperium between you and me. All the signs suggest he seeks to assert the supremacy of Mars over that of Terra. He sighed and waved his goblet around him, taking in all the dignitaries, toadies, servers, servitors, and every other human being in the room. A room full of agendas does not make for happy governance. It is, all things told, a sorry mess of a game.
I cannot see this as a game, Grandmaster.
But it is a game, Courland, said Vangerich. A very serious game, but a game nonetheless.
If all the pieces are compromised, then what is left? Said Courland.
What is left is you and I, said Vangerich, tapping a finger against Courland's chest eagle. So we best hope you are successful in hauling our collective skins out of the fire. I do not wish to see the time come when the Imperium has to rely on the Grand Master of the Assassinorum. We are gardeners, we assassins. A snip and a prune. We are not intended for the wholesale remodelling of government, or, the Emperor forfend, the wielding of power. He smiled innocently, his scar twisting his face. Unlike Udo's disfigurement, it somehow made the assassin appear even more genial. For a man who protested his lack of interest in power, thought Corland, he seemed remarkably adept at wielding it. Ah, my goblet appears to be empty, said Vangerich. This evening, I feel like drinking. This week has been taxing. He rested a hand on Corland's vambrace and said sotto voce, let us continue this some other time. Vangerich sauntered off, greeting men and women with a warmth shot through with insolence. Thane came to his side. The chapter masters had been besieged by coteries of adepts, some of whom were there at Udo's behest to keep them apart. But when a space marine in full battle plate chose to move through a room, people had no choice but to quickly remove themselves from his path. I tire of their flattery and wheedling, said Thane.
This room is a viper's nest, said Corland.
Aye, and Grand Master Vangerich is the biggest snake of all. Be wary of him, brother.
A life of war, of bolt and blade, was preferable to this, said Corland.
I agree, but Issachar has it right.
We have a different kind of battle to fight now. The supplicants kept their distance from the chapter master's quiet conference, all save one. The fat man, sealed into ceremonial ecclesiarchal robes, so encrusted in jewels they were thick as battle plate. Ecclesiarch Mesring. He came over, sweating under the weight of his robes of office despite the four hollow-eyed, shaven-headed acolytes holding his train. A whole host of others trailed him, priests, scribes and petitioners, anxiously awaiting a moment to speak with him. Mesring interrupted the Space Marines impolitely.
Chapter Masters, I come to offer my thanks. You do the Emperor's duty. He's pleased.
Corlin turned from his conversation with Thane.
You are Mesring, Ecclesiarch of the Adeptus Ministorum?
Mesring was taken aback at Corlin's feigned ignorance, but rallied well.
A grandiose title for a humble role. I am fortunate to interpret the Emperor's will.
He bowed stiffly from the waist, his chins wobbling with the effort.
And it is glorious to stand before his favoured servants, his holy sons.
His pale flesh gleamed, and he slurred his words despite his manners. Corlin suspected he was drunk.
Your garb tells another story than humility, said Thane. You tell me the Emperor is pleased. Who are you to know?
You gainsay the will of the Holy Emperor, said Mesring.
Your religion means nothing to me, said Thane. My chapter follows the tenets of the imperial truth set down by the Emperor during the Great Crusade. How quickly you have forgotten it. We are not holy. Do not treat us as such.
1,500 years is a long time, Chapter Master, said Mesring. The imperial truth is all but forgotten. The scriptures tell us that the Emperor conceived of it as a necessary lie. The very name is an exercise in irony. Only in death has the Emperor cast off his corporeal cloak and revealed himself to us in his true glory.
I disagree, said Thane. Your cult profanes his memory with idolatry.
When will the Adeptus Astartes see the light? Said Mesring. It troubles me, my son, that the Emperor's own angels deny the truth.
We are not angels, snorted Thane.
You were among those who urged the populace to take the oath of crusade, said Corlin. I did, as was only right.
It proved to be wholly wrong, said Corlin. A rash move that risked provoking the orcs and cost the lives of millions, while you and Tull and the others who promoted it remain alive and well.
A flicker of consternation crossed Mesring's face.
Then it is good that you are here now to fight them on our behalf.
Aye, that is what we are, priests. Warriors, said Thane.
One day I hope to bring all our mighty warriors into the truth of the faith. Some are perhaps more amenable than others.
His gaze strayed around the room, looking for someone. He smiled secretly to himself.
Then go and speak to them, said Thane.
He glared menacingly at Mesring until the ecclesiarch made his excuses and left. A surge of anger built in Corlin's chest. The men and women around him had been scheming while terror burned. The temptation to sweep it all aside was great.
I'm done here, he told Thane. I return to the fleet. The Senatorum is broken, all the High Lords invested only in their own advancement. I have heard the name of the Emperor invoked by every charlatan in this house. This cannot be allowed to continue.
With that, he left the room, the crowd parting hurriedly before him.